Hello there, and welcome to another edition of Debate. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Europe can no longer rely on the United States for its security. It's up to us today to take responsibilities and guarantee our own security and thus have European sovereignty. Well, those are the remarks Macron made on Monday in an address to French ambassadors. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas had also recently urged greater European military cooperation and code forming a counterweight to Washington. Now, how serious is the European Union, and what would this mean for the future of NATO? That's what we'll be discussing in the debate today. Now, to begin with, let's go to Donegal in Ireland to get an update from Press TV's correspondent Jerome Hughes on Macron's remarks and its ripple effects. Jerome, over to you.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, let me just remind our viewers, for example, before Donald Trump was elected, he described the European Union as a failed would-be superstate. He described Brussels as a hellhole. He described NATO as obsolete. And of course, since his election, relations between the United States and the European Union have deteriorated on a whole range of fronts, including relation to climate change, the Middle East peace process, the Iran nuclear deal, and trade. And so really this is not surprising that we're hearing these type of comments from Macron. We've heard similar comments from the head of the EU Council, Tusk, and the head of the EU Commission, Juncker, and as you mentioned, the German foreign minister recently in a newspaper article, similar comments as well. It's significant because, of course, Germany and France are the two sort of powerhouses in the European Union now that we have Brexit, now that Britain is leaving. And when you look at the head of the Commission, Juncker, himself and Macron would have very similar views in terms of the future of the European Union. And, you know, really, in terms of what Trump said about a would-be superstate, it's kind of what a lot of critics are saying is that Macron and Juncker would like to see a superstate because we have this EU army coming down the tracks. And, I mean, we know that during the election campaign, Macron promised all sorts of reforms to the European Union. And now we're expecting to hear his plans in detail in the coming months. But a big part of that is this EU army. It's not called an EU army. It's called PESCO, Permanent Structured Cooperation. But really, it is an EU army in all but name. And the European Union is setting aside billions of euro from the EU budget, from the European Commission budget, which critics say could be spent on trying to solve the social crisis in the EU. And this is going to be going on an EU army. But really, when you look at relations within NATO, obviously Trump has been a major disruptor in terms of NATO, but also relations between the US and Turkey. Turkey, of course, is a NATO member. So there are major divisions within NATO. You also have Brexit. You also have the deteriorating relations between the US and the EU. And therefore, we're hearing these comments about the European Union need to go it alone. No longer can they rely on Washington.
Okay, thank you for that. That was Jerome Hughes, one of our correspondents in Europe. Okay, now let me introduce the guest that will be joining us in today's debate show to discuss this. We'll have former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert from Florida, and also private investor and writer Charles Orter joining us from New York. Now, let me start with Mr. Rickert in Florida. Well, Macron has said that Europe can no longer rely on the United States for its security. What has made him say that, make such a remark? Why has he come to this conclusion?
Well, that's typical for Macron. He speaks out of both sides of his mouth. When you look at him, obviously, this is an individual who supported the illegal war on Syria. This is also an individual at the same time who is been in cahoots with the United States in other NATO war crimes. So the facts are that obviously Macron has some negative feelings toward Donald Trump, which rightfully so. Donald Trump has been no friend to anyone anywhere other than his constituency in the United States. And then at the same time, you know, when it comes to France and the EU, you know, they're all falling in line with these sanctions. You know, you have Total now, you have French Airways now ending flights next month to Iran. Obviously, the United Kingdom's going to fall in suit with these sanctions. So sadly, you know, he says one thing, that NATO is going to support their own military infrastructure, Well, let's be clear that that is a double-edged sword. If NATO does put a lot of the EU money into military equipment, who knows how that equipment will be used in the future? Certainly, that was not something that would have been used wisely in Syria. Certainly, France had a lot in involved, as well as Italy, when it came to Libya. So there are some negative downfalls to the European Union building up a larger military. A larger military is not necessary. But one encouraging thing that I did actually hear Macron say, which, by the way, I rarely do like anything Macron or Trump actually say, was that he was going to go alongside and actually try to bring Russia into an alliance with the European Union. Now, that's actually encouraging that someone would actually be wise enough to say that at this point in the game.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, when it came to Obama and mm-hmm. the and the NATO alliance, you know, they were okay. also committing war crimes. So I really don't see any future here.
Okay, we'll come to that Russia thing later on the show. Okay, let's go to New York to Charles Horta. In May 2018, German Chancellor Angela Merkel made a similar comment, saying that Europe can no longer count on the U.S. for military protection and must take its destiny into its own hands. That's what Chancellor Merkel said. Now, is there a consensus, Charles, among major European powers, of course, except for the U.K., that they should wean from relying on the U.S. in terms of security?
Well, I can't speak for all the major Western European powers, but what I would say is that when you look at things through an economic prism, as I do, and you ask yourself, is the European Union a force for economic good for the population at large, or is it really a super state that entrenches bureaucrats and politicians and cronyists and globalists into a system of high tax, high government social welfare spending, and not enough spending on defense? And I think, you know, I've been calling for years, actually, for the disbanding of the European Union, because it's just yet another bureaucracy on top of bloated national bureaucracies in France and Germany and other states across Western Europe. I think it's strangling the population and the aspirations of Europeans economically. And I find it rich, in fact, that your first correspondent was talking to us from Ireland. There's a state that, is, I think, has gamed the European Union by driving towards very low taxes, very lean government spending. That's a direction that Europe at large should follow, but hasn't. So economically, I think the European Union hasn't worked well, and I think it inevitably will break up. As far as military spending is concerned, I do think the European nations, most of them, have not committed to the 2% level of GDP of spending, which is a precondition, supposedly, of being a NATO ally. So I think it's good to see France and Germany spend more on their own defense. And I also believe the American taxpayers are increasingly more and more frustrated with the notion that we should be subsidizing the military spending, the defense spending, of nations like France and Germany, which are very rich today.
Okay. Scott Rickert. Macron says that he wants, and I'm quoting him, an exhaustive review of European security with EU countries to Russia. What do you think is the reason for Macron's proposal?
Well, he's on his way this week already to Finland and other European Union potential partners. I think that what we're seeing here is a possibility of the European, players along NATO to actually take a more serious look at Russia. Obviously, in the past, if you look at French history in the early 1900s, the French were the largest investors in the Industrial Revolution of Russia. The Russian and French alliance goes back as far as Napoleon as well, whereby they basically, the Russians have been involved in that state as well. So you don't have a very short memory here in the European Union and Russia. This is a long-standing relationship. The French had a $250 million arms deal that was canceled because of their foreign policy alongside NATO in Syria, but albeit France were very much behind it. because it was a former French colony in Syria. So they were very much behind the invasion as well as the destruction of Syria and trying to topple Assad. So you have here, the French are playing both sides of the coin with the Russians. Obviously, they'd like to have them back as a consumer of their military goods. And at the same time, certainly Russia would make a great partner for the European allies. This allied ship upon NATO really is controlled by the Dutch, the British, the French, and the Germans. The other players are quite smaller, obviously, because of their outside of Sweden, per se. Sweden's alliance with the British has been over 500 years. So we have a serious alliance between the NATO partners that could potentially be modified if you could bring in Russia. And I think strategically, from a geopolitical perspective, given the Americans' horrific foreign policy status, it would be fantastic for the European Union.
All right, now to New York, Charles Orter. Let's bring America in. Now, Donald Trump has been critical, as you know, of European contribution to NATO's military budget. He asked for more than 2%, and he said that this should be raised to 4% even. How far do you think this has pushed the Europeans to take security matters into their own hands?
Well, you know, I think it's one thing to talk on television about Europe taking security matters into their own hands. When we think about the long sweep of history, the size and scope and track record, like it or not, of our American military is a formidable fighting force with sadly, a lot of battle-tested experience around the world. To think that a nation like France or even Germany, rich as they are economically, is going to throw off any ties, any productive ties that it may have had with the United States, and go down a path of maybe trying to replace the United States with a far smaller economy and a far smaller fighting force in Russia. I think, you know, that's nice coffee table talk and faculty lunchrooms and stuff like that, but as a practical matter, that's not going to happen. And if anything, going down that path inside Europe, I think, is only going to prompt the type of reactions that you've seen in Donald Trump's election and what may happen soon in Sweden, what's happened in Brexit and elsewhere. I think the notion that these left-leaning Euro lovers are going to continue to run France, Germany, and Italy, I don't think that's going to happen. And so, you know, it's interesting talk. I think we should always in America be respectful of our allies. We could do a better job of that. But when you look at the hard math of spending, military spending, the American taxpayer has been subsidizing Europe's defense for too long for way too much money.
Okay, let me ask Scott Brickard in Florida. Scott, do you believe, do you agree with what Charles told us? He doesn't seem to think that Europe is strong enough, considering what I call the formidable size of the U.S. military, to take security affairs into their own hands. What do you think?
Well, I find it laughable, you know, because the fact is that the United States is subsidizing Israeli's military to the nth degree, and there's no discussion about that in any of Trump or, I imagine, Charles Ortel's commentary. Albeit, I do respect Charles Ortel's research on the Clinton Foundation, his track record when it comes to being pro-Israel and obviously pro-war from those perspectives in that region is horrific. At this point, though, when you're looking at the actual funding of military, the United States is out of control. I mean, Adolf Hitler is laughing in his grave, for God's sakes. The U.S. military industrial complex is one of the most brutal regimes in the history of the world. Over 30 to 40 million people have been killed in my lifetime alone at the end of American sword. I would ask Charles Ortel to go out and look at Del Walter's Apocalypse Africa, Made in America. Del Walter's is an esteemed reporter, has done immensely great work around the world, and he's talked about the tremendous foreign policy failures of the United States and Africa alone. So this is, you know, when you talk about strategically, I'm saying choosing Russia as a partner and offsetting some of the costs to Europe for their own defense, which, by the way, their defense was going to be against Russia, to be honest with you, from a NATO perspective. That is not a bad idea. In fact, it may make some of the Americans wake up. I hope and I pray that these sanctions and this insanity in the United States does bring some sanity to the world, because obviously it's hopefully will backfire on Trump, and the sanctions will actually fall on their face, and NATO will actually put the United States in its place and actually say, you know, enough is enough. They've been occupying Germany for too long, South Korea for too long, certainly 200 plus operating environments around the world, thousands, tens of thousands of troops deployed around the world. This is a tremendous military force that has committed atrocities and has not paid any type of war crime debts that are due to any of the nations that they've destroyed. So this is a small step for man, but a large step for mankind, I would say, if we could actually expose, and my hat's off actually to Donald Trump for that, expose the atrocities within the United States. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. Donald Trump has become a part of them by choosing his administration and taking us down the same path mm-hmm. as his predecessors.
Okay, Charles Rotel, looks like you want to make some reaction to
I hope he does.
Scott Rickard's comments. Go ahead, please.
If I could. I mean, first of all, I'm certainly not a member of the pro-war party in the United States. In fact, I began, after retiring in 2002 at the age of 46 from a life in finance,
I said you're very anti-Iranian.
Let me just finish my thought. I began in 2007. I'm not anti-Iranian people. I'm anti the Iranian government. And
exactly.
What I would say to you is that I began my career exposing corruption at General Electric, which is hardly, you know, a typical conservative approach. I'm perhaps, you know, the best known critic of General Electric. I definitely feel that the deep state needs to be brought under control. I'm not somebody who believes that the United States has covered itself solely in glory, particularly since 1945. So, you know, don't tar me with that brush. I've written quite a few pieces about mistakes the United States has made with regard to our Iranian policy. I think the Iranian people and the American people have a lot in common. And I think governments around the world need to be reformed, which is one of the reasons I'm so much against a bloated Eurostate. I think that's just another mistaken path to go down.
And let's just stick to the main point,
where
please.
People are disrupting large bureaucracies.
Yeah. Charles, please, let's just stick to the main point. You were talking about a European United Army and NATO and that kind of thing.
Sure. I think, you know, if we look into the real world at the size of military spending today in, pick a country, Germany, France, Italy, you name it, the degree to which these forces have been active in military, true military campaigns around the world, they just really haven't been, with certain exceptions, Britain in NATO, in Afghanistan. You know, it's just to say that you're going to go from where we are today and throw the United States out of NATO, if that's what you're suggesting, replacing it with Russia, that's never going to happen.
Okay, we're just coming to Russia, because also Scott referred to that. How do you think, Scott, that the inclusion of Russia, as Macron was talking about it, in the provision of security for the EU could affect Europe's relations with the United States? Could Russia be a good replacement, let's say, for the U.S.?
Well, I have to agree with Charles Rotel on this one. I really don't think it'll be a replacement. I think what it'll be is a check and a balance, if it's ever even accepted by the EU as a check and a balance, very much what Israel and Egypt and other nations have done in the geopolitical forums. They've dealt, including Greece as well, they've dealt with both Russia and the United States as weapons trading partners, as well as geopolitical influencing partners. Certainly, when you look at the balance of a smaller nation, it makes sense. You get a better deal if you try to deal with both of the superpowers, obviously bringing the Chinese in as well. The Chinese have been extremely great partners with the French. So you have the French, the Russians, and obviously the Chinese already have a great relationship. Certainly, Germany could follow suit with that because of their close ties on the energy side of the markets. There are tremendous amounts of value in really diversifying for EU, and I hope that EU would make that decision strategically mm-hmm. because it would distance themselves from the ownership that the United States has mm-hmm. placed on
okay.
NATO In fact, they don't really own NATO. And in fact, I agree with Trump on this one. It is an organization that does need to be disbanded, and it would be nice to see it become more independent.
Okay, one last question, Charles Orter in New York. Very briefly, please, we're running out of time. In which direction do you anticipate things to move in Europe in terms of security? Very briefly, please.
Very briefly, well, I see the European Union continuing to fall into trouble. I think there'll be talk about this European army. I don't think it'll come together. I think you'll see more and more nations, frankly, reject the European Union, and you could see more exits from the European Union.
Oh, great. And Scott Rickert?
Well, obviously, the European Union has hurt many of the smaller nations. Certainly, Greece can attest to that. Portugal can attest to that. I do agree that it is something that was a bad idea from the beginning. I urged all my friends in Greece and on the island of Crete that actually had the opportunity in 2012 to secede from Greece from their 100-year treaty with the mainland. So, unfortunately, you have a European Union that has been failing for quite some time, and a few of the nation states in the European Union held it together economically. But at the end of the day, it certainly hasn't benefited all the states, and many of the states that are joining now, like Montenegro, as well as other smaller states, they're going to find it very difficult to operate in a soon-to-be failing environment.
Okay, thank you for your comments. We had former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert from Florida, and also private investor and writer Charles Orter from New York. Thank you both gentlemen for making your comments. And also we should thank our viewers for watching this. See you next time.